Carmen accepted the fact that Andrew was going to be absent. We're up to confirmation of the agenda. Can I say to members, it's a fairly heavy agenda. So there'll be some discipline. There are some issues and there's some very dense reading that we've been through. But we want to get through to the end. That wasn't yours, Gavin? It wasn't yours. You were okay. Although yours was very long. Conflict of interest. Members are reminded of the need to stand aside from decision-making when a conflict arises between their role as an elected rep and any private or other external interest they might have. Public forum. Now, look at these likely lads at the end. Here are our presentation for the public forum. So I've got... They're not public forum, they're a presentation, sorry.
Yeah.
Are there any members here for the public forum? Okay, so for the presentations, we have got Mrs. Randall. Randall, would you like to introduce the other people around you? I just picked on you.
Yes, I can if you want.
Yeah, go for it.
So I'm Randall Aspinall from the Wanaka Catchment Group. I'm up at Wanaka. I've got Lyndon Strang and Peter Mitchell from Noslan, the North Otago Catchment Groups. I've got Lloyd McCall, who represents the Pomahaka Water Care Group. And the Southwest Otago South River Care Group. And we've got Jeff Crutchley, who's here for the. What's your proper name, Jeff?
Upper Tauri
Catchment Group.
I just wanted to check you out later on, Jeff Crutchley. That name I went to school with.
Quake in your boots if she checks you.
Okay, under in your hands, you're going to tell us what you're doing.
Just got a little technical issue here. We had our presentation up on the screen and now it's gone to the blue screen.
Oh dear. Oh, it's all right. It's she who must be obeyed has arrived at your side.
Can I have her next, please?
Yeah.
It's being sent to us as well.
Yes, or one we've got. Yeah. Mm. I believe it is. And the Wanaka, it says Wanaka Catchment Group or something, I can't find it.
Having trouble with my index.
That's all right.
Any other questions?
Oh, green. It's an environmental screen.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I might get rid of
the
and then do it.
Yeah. No,
that's
fine.
Are you under control?
I think so.
While she's under the desk doing strange things, can somebody confirm the minutes of the 11th of December? So we'll go through. Carmen, thank you. And somebody like to second it? Gretchen, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carrie. The minutes of the 7th of January, can I have a move?
Sorry, I've got to ask a question.
On the 7th of January minutes?
Yes.
And me too.
There's a comment in there that we invited
people who contributed that day, since we had shortened their time frame, to give us their written comments. I've only received directly three of those. I'm wondering if people did give those to staff and they didn't come to us. Because it... Sorry.
I created a shared drive that I gave to all of them. So I guess I assume...
Well, no, it comes down to we made decisions having given that clear wording, and I appreciate that the minutes reflect what was said of that day, but we've made decisions on them without, and I don't know where they are. I just want to know where they are.
So you know where they are, you don't want to amend the minutes?
No, but I want to be very careful that the minutes reflect what we actually said would do.
It's done.
I'd like to amend the minutes of the 7th, just to add in that Councillor Hobbs reminded the speakers how the council was going to respond, mumble, mumble. She noted that the council resolution, she also asked people to speak only for 5 minutes.
Yes.
Doesn't say that there.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes, you can put that in. Okay.
Just because it was.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I just have two little, I think they're just typos, really. Kate Scott is not representing McKee Consultancy, she's representing AMPRO.
But she intended to speak with.
Mm-hmm.
They specifically told me that.
that was clarified then, that's cool. And the other one was just around when, above that, was said previously, we were referring to Councillor Hobbs, wanted to speak not to repeat what had been previously said, and asked the councillors to hold their questions. I think asked is probably a bit of a generalisation. It should really be told.
Required?
Told, all right. Obviously a very nasty person.
I think for completeness and clarification, I think that should be clear.
Okay, I accept that. Any other changes? Can I have a move and a seconder with those changes? Carmen? And seconded Alexa. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
And against? Carried. Are we now ready to go, people? Go for it.
Madam Chairperson, councillors and staff, thank you for having us here today. We've come here as a cross-section of the different catchment groups around Otago. We don't represent all the groups, but we're more here to give you guys an idea of the different land types, the different farm types, and the different approaches we take to managing our own little patches. Up on the board here is an iconic photo of Lake Wanaka taken from Roy's Peak. The Wanaka catchment group is pretty much all the land you can see in that photo between the water and the snow. We have 14 members out of a total of 17 significant farms in the catchment. This represents over 80% of the farmed area in the catchment, and the majority of the white area you can see on the map is conservation land managed by DOC. The purpose of our group is to support our members in three main areas. The first one being around decision making about how we manage critical source or tricky areas on farm, winter cropping being an obvious one. The second one is to educate and encourage our members about how they can better protect and enhance special places on their farm. And the third one is to help them deal with the visitor and the perception issues that we do get in our area. The group's been going for just over 2 years since we set it up, and the focus of phase one was to try and get as many farms to have a level 3 land environment plan established for their property, so a farm plan. These were delivered for us by Chris Arbuckle from Aspiring Environmental, so an accredited consultant. And there's a lot of information in them with detailed soil maps, nutrient maps, irrigation maps, maps identifying critical source or at-risk areas on the farm, and an overseer nutrient budget for each property. That information then flows into an action plan, which effectively prioritises those at-risk areas or the areas of concern on farm, and then provides suggestions and information about how these issues can be mitigated or eliminated. The one point I'd like to make here about our plans is that they've been 100% self-funded from within the group, so all group members have contributed $6,000 to get these done. And the other thing is we have 12 out of the 14 farms are in the farm plan process. We've made a point of not making it a compulsory requirement to be in the group, because we see the value of the farm plans as being part of the process, not about the final result. So we only want people doing them if they're willing to do them and they're willingly going to participate and join in with Chris to develop the plan and learn from that. We don't want them doing it, paying for it, and throwing it in the drawer just because we've told them they have to. As I say, the first 2 years have been focused around the farm plans, but there's quite a bit of other stuff that's just spun out of it on the way. In the middle on the left, we've got four properties that have done joint projects with Fish and Game, Forest and Bird, and some community groups out of Wanaka to fence off, plant, and protect riparian and wetland areas. We've got two more in early discussions to do that, and two that have done a lot off their own bat. We've done a couple of research projects with the University of Otago and AgResearch, just looking at little specific areas. On the top right, we're 4 months into a project with the ORC, which I think is the Good Water Project, it's called, which is a lot of water sampling, collecting a lot of data more intensively for one catchment, so we can get a better understanding of the health of our waterways on our farm, and also an opportunity to play around and learn more about the impact our farming operations have on these in particular. And along the way, we've had a little bit of a chance to inform and tell our story to the wider community. What we're looking at now is where to from here. We've had so we're 2 years in, the farm plan phase is more or less completed. We now need to know where to go. We've had a very clear direction from our members that they want to continue and probably move into an education phase where they learn more about managing the issues identified in the farm plans. And these are these issues around visitors, wetland riparian management, feed crops, grazing management, and other critical source areas like stock crossings and salt dumps, and how we can all manage them to have a reduced impact. So what we're looking to do is we'll run a series of workshops from here or field days targeted at our members, and each one of them will be targeted at those specific areas of concern to educate and motivate our farmers. We want to put a real focus on educating our farm workers because they often miss a lot of the information or don't get told why they're doing stuff, yet they're the ones that are actually out there making day-to-day decisions and out-of-hour decisions. And it can be as simple as where do you throw a salt block when you put it out for the cows. As I mentioned, the Good Water Otago project with the ORC, which I think is going to be really good for engagement with our group, and just providing some information to help us better understand what's actually going on and help all our members understand that. We need to work on and look to some other groups for guidance around an audit and follow-up process for our LEPs. So keep it simple, but how can we make sure that our members are actually acting upon what we identified? And we want to keep on where we can engaging and informing the wider community through talking to people, talking to groups, a little bit of media work, specific signage on farm, etc. That's it from Wanaka. I'll pass you over to Peter and Lyndon from Northland now.
Thank you. Shall we hold all our questions to the end of all four of them? That'd be all right? Okay, on you go, young man.
Okay, hi. Thank you, councillors, for giving you the time, for allowing us to present to you. I'm Peter Mitchell, arable farmer from North Otago, and I'm current chair of NOSLAM, which is the North Otago Sustainable Land Management Group. So just a wee bit of history about NOSLAM. In the 80s, North Otago was about survivors in North Otago, drought, soil loss, low production, which was very unsustainable. In the 90s, NOSLAM got going, and which was a farmer-based group. It was supported by the regional council back then too, as we are today. It focused on soil conservation, minimum tillage, and lucerne, and then along came irrigation. And now NOSLAM went into recession for a little bit, and with the advent of irrigation, we now have water quality things that we need to be dealing with, and we're doing that currently now. And in the future, we don't greenhouse gases, biodiversity, and biosecurity will also be part of our strategy as well. So why do we need a catchment group? Well, farmers were asking for our help, and other stakeholders and the wider community wanted to know what was happening. So we have developed a strategy, which four pillars in our strategy, and one of those is connectivity, working with stakeholders, and then with on-farm change, driving on-farm change, promoting on-farm change to improve water quality where needed, and then science and monitoring, which Lyndon will talk about shortly. So we're continuing being adaptive to issues and answering the questions that farmers and or the wider community ask, so that we're able to meet the requirements that we need to do as land users. So who are we connecting with? NOSLAM's been going for 6 years now, and in the first 4 years it was all voluntary time. And in the last 2 years, we have had a paid coordinator of approximately 20 hours a week. And they're funded by the North Otago Irrigation Company, which is shareholder money, farmer money. And the Waitaki District Council and also the Otago Regional Council. And in the last 2 years, we've made some really good headway because we've had someone to help us keep the ball rolling and keep the momentum going when we're in the lambing season or the calving season or the harvest season. We can get things done. So it's been over the last 2 years, we on our database we have 530 people on our database. 499 of them are active subscribers. 200 of those are farmers. 97 are actively involved in pod groups. Pod groups are a satellite group on a tributary which might have a particular issue that they need to deal with, so they're dealing with that, and we facilitate their needs by bringing in people to help them. Lyndon will talk about that shortly. The remaining 330 people are other stakeholders, including schools, public interest groups, community groups, industry and residents, and we have spoken as an organisation to the likes of Rotary and Lions and other interested groups in the town, U3A, and made them listen to what they've had to say, made them aware of what we're doing, the rural communities are engaged and active.
Great. So I just want to go through a wee bit on what makes a successful catchment group. We've been through the good and the bad of it, and we've been down a road that's tested all different approaches. We need to first of all sit down and determine what our values are, and that was something we did early on. And so we got all the different interested parties around the table, and we did a lot of whiteboard action. And at the time, the farmers involved thought it was a bit of hot air and wind, and it was a bit of a waste of space. But it's really set the groundwork for the good stuff that we're doing now and the involvement that we have. We found shared positive goals. We don't agree on everything, and I think we all accept we have a different view on some things, but we did find the common ground, and that was really important because that gave us a starting point. We definitely balanced the talking with the doing. There's the risk of just sitting around the table and talking and not doing anything. So we found it was really important to get out and just do projects. Some of them might have been really important to water quality. Some of them might have been really important to the feel of that community. So we gave and take a wee bit on the projects we do. So we share the wins amongst the community members. It's not just about doing things on farm. It's about doing things down at the Kakanui Estuary or in other parts of the catchment. The most important thing there is we listen to each other. And that was a learning curve a lot from the farmers. Yeah, we kind of went in, we've got a problem, we need to solve it, here's what we're going to do, but we needed to sit down and listen to the other stakeholders. Connecting with farmers, this is challenging as well. What works for us is we have small groups or pods. We keep the issues relevant. We create a comfortable environment for people to share and to share ideas and to converse. Sometimes a one-to-one is actually a better approach than a large group meeting where we can call in 50 people and the quiet guy sits at the back and doesn't contribute. So we found smaller groups were more successful. We break the issues down into manageable and achievable chunks. So we don't at the moment, there's a lot of uncertainty coming down the pipeline, and we're aware of it more than probably what we are. But we need to break it down into what can be done on farm and make sure it's an achievable and manageable task. We listen to experts that know the area and the situation, and we call a lot on ORC to fill that role. And I think we need more of that going forward. We do not waste time for meetings for meeting's sake, and we use good science. We have a pay coordinator, as Pete said, which has absolute gold for us. And we always offer food. You bring food along, and you get twice the response is what you do if you don't, and also attendance. Engaging with stakeholders. So what we've decided to do there is be non-political. We're not a lobby group. We're not out there. We've all got our own agendas, and we've all got our own ideas, but we've chosen to be non-political. We've also kept an open door policy, so we don't have a forced membership. If NOSLAM's delivering for community members, being farmers or residents, they can come and be involved in a project, or they can just not turn up. And that's the acid test for us. If we're not delivering, we won't get attendance and we won't get people engaged. We work together, as I mentioned, on common goals. We involve kids a lot. Kids are a great conduit through the schools to get people working together. People, if they have a strong opinion, whether it's a farmer or a resident or another stakeholder, they tend to actually tone it down a bit when the kids are standing next to them and we have some good, rational conversations. So So that's been a really good catalyst. We do a lot of projects, we have a lot of fun, and this is a really good site. I like this site because it shows all the groups involved in that particular planting. Now, there's the Kakanui School, the Mahino School, the Garden Club, a couple of local farmers stumping up a bit of money and land for it. So it really shows us how we've been working together. So how can OSC support catchment groups? I think if I had to really cut it short there and say that's it, it's just a genuine collaborative approach. Keep us around the table, keep us engaged, and we work together on the solutions. Going a little bit more specific, environmental monitoring is important to gauge how the success that we're making in our catchments. We need catchment-specific projects, so specific science projects related to that catchment. And that can either be OSC or it can be us going out and finding additional funding for a science question that we need to answer. And seamless sharing of technical data and through a GIS or something similar. We need a platform or a portal where we can all work together and input information. That information can then be accessed by the council to gauge how we're going. Whether it's trees planted or land use types or wetlands developed, we need to bring that data into a central portal somehow. On-farm support, really like the way that the liaison team is going at the moment. It's great, and we need more of it, and we need them unleashed and let on farmers to offer good advice. That's important. Local compliance is important. We need a local compliance officer who understands the issues. They have a job to do, and we need to understand that there's always going to be a stick coming in behind if the basic standards aren't upheld. Okay. We need to assist with iwi and runanga relationship. That's important for us. Financial support comes down to three big things. Seed funding for setting up catchment groups, long-term funding for administration facilitator support. That's the hardest funding to get, is for administration support, and that's the one we really need. Mm-hmm. And then contestable fund for special catchment projects, so we can approach for different ones. So in summary, got a new council and a great fresh a new opportunity for a fresh approach. The community really wants to work together and have the support of the council. Heading towards the revised water plan and FMU process, genuine collaboration can start now, and we can set up the groundwork for that process. And working together does have better environmental outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well done. Thank you for the opportunity. The Apatari Group is a follow-on from the Tauri Trust from quite a few years ago. Gretchen ably managed that project and continued on in the first years of the Upper Tauri Group as well. The objective initially was to, mainly, we got wrapped up in the deem permit conversion. And those of us who were involved in the early stages realised that we were building from ground zero at that point, at a time when the farmers who attended mainly took it as an opportunity to come along and vent their spleen at Fish and Game and Doc and the others who were around the table. It took a long time to build respect and trust and the relationships that now exist. Our group is diverse in that respect. We include all of those parties, and about half the people who sit around the table these days are from the other agencies, not just farmers. I would hope that the council has a particular interest in the role that these groups can play in the consenting process. Although I'm pleased to report that unlike any other catchment in Otago, we have pretty much completed the conversion of mining deem permits. There's still a few of them there, certainly, but the main ones that are coming out of the main tributary or the main water bodies have been completed, with the Sourburn, the Manitoba scheme itself, and the Kyburn group. That said, I have some regrets that we didn't realise our potential as a catchment group in facilitating that process. And I believe that there's room, huge room for improvement. We've progressed, in my memory, from the old catchment board days when we looked at converting consents for individual farmers on a one-by-one basis. It was tedious, but the process was appropriate probably at that time. Now we're looking at converting whole groups of farmers with an enormous impact on communities. Where you're talking tens of millions of dollars and the impact that it has on those communities, and we're expecting to get those through using the same process we've used in the past. We could do better. My belief that we should be coming to the Regional Council with most of the work done through those catchment groups, and I believe the potential was there to do it. There's a great deal of goodwill in that room. The irony is that even though we had a lot of information that we'd gathered over the years, when it came to the consenting process, if you take the latest one we did with the Cliburn Group, the parties departed to their own corners and went through the same old adversarial process. We got there, but the process was, the consent was granted, it was then appealed, then we went to mediation, and in mediation we started to behave a little more like catchment group again. And we talked to one another and eventually came to a deal. Why did we not put that at the beginning of the process instead of the end? It cost us all a lot of money, but the greatest cost is in the loss of goodwill and the relationships that were formed were largely destroyed in that process. So I would hope that you will recognise the potential catchment groups to assist with you in that process going forward. The second area that is fairly obvious, I think, is in what's come out lately in freshwater management. Here we have a whole lot of rules being delivered from on high, which are going to impose severe burden on communities. Again, I think the potential is there to take a lot of the impact out of those rules and get a far better result working through catchment groups. Some of the rules that we look at on wetlands, for example, in the Manitoba, we look at them and think, well, these rules have obviously been written for something quite different from the wetlands that we're looking at. When you talk about putting fences 5 metres from the boundary of the wetland, look around and think, well, where the hell is that? It's not defined. It's very difficult to see where it is. It's not like the Sinclair wetland or whatever, it is a scroll plane. And it is not something that we can manage according to the rules that have been proposed. If we close that wetland off from cattle, as being suggested, we've got enormous problems. That country is filled with exotic grasses, and we've seen already in one area where it was shut down, where the grass has grown to about the height of my head, which is high enough to cover most things of value. It became infested with wild pigs. Willow started to proliferate in it, and it was realised then that the covenant in that case had been misunderstood, and it returned to normal grazing after some consultation with Fish and Game. Fish and Game, through the Apatari Group, have been involved in developing a wetland management plan in the last few years. That involves Morgan Trotter from Fish and Game and a number of farmers. And they have submitted in opposition to the proposed plans, making the case that it would not be appropriate to shut that country up as is being suggested under those plans. What I would propose, and how practical and how far we can go with it, I have to leave to your judgment, but some of the rules that are there, if we could, for example, instead of having a whole lot of individual, the requirement for individual farm environment plans, which is being proposed, recognise the vast variety of farms that exist in that community and the differing impacts that they have on the environment, we would like to develop a whole of community a whole community environment plan and get farmers to buy into that in much the same way as they bought into a pest management plan years ago In many ways, it's very similar. I remember sitting in front of this council 20-odd years ago and arguing in favour of a pest company for Maniatoto. And while the council paid some lip service to it at that time, they were pretty much opposed to it because they were committed to regional pest services. And I'd invite you to decide for yourself which horse won that race. We now have a pretty good record of pest control in Maniatoto, and it's certainly not something you could say for the rest of the Otago, Central Otago. Trying to address it on a farm-by-farm basis didn't work, and I don't think addressing environment plans on a farm-by-farm basis works either. I would encourage you to at least consider recognising a catchment environment plan as being the equivalent of a farm plan where those farms buy into it in the same way as the farmers did into the pest company. We can deliver better outcomes that way. I'll butt out and look forward to your questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings and thank you very much. Special greetings to the chair. Thank you for having us here. It's an honour to be here again. There's some new faces around the table, and it would be good to get to meet you as time travels. Just before I'd like to start, Madam Chairperson, I was just wondering our time frame, because we want to leave 10 minutes or so for questions, so I'll tailor my talk to make sure we've got time for questions.
What I'd like to do, and this is for the whole council, is you do your talk, and then we'll have questions, and then we'll move to the paper so that you... So the hearing for the person from the paper to you
will
be here. And then we'll go back down into the ordinary things that are on the agenda.
Thank you very much. So Lloyd McCall from the Pomahaga, Targa's wife place. Pomahaga Water Care Group, Te Akina Te Māori O Te Wai, look after the life force of the water. That's what it's all about. I'm also involved with the Targa South River Care, setting up groups down there. Basically, my job today is not to talk so much about our projects, but to have an overview of what what we can do for the council and what the council can do for us. And this, a lot of this has come out of, it's already in your paper, but a lot of it's come out of the meeting that we had with the Otago Catchment Groups meeting, where we brainstormed it with about 10 or a dozen catchment groups there. So it's all like a conglomerate of them all. I'd just like to start with getting my clicky to click. First of all, I'd just like to start with, we have a vision, like my vision, I'm just referring to the Otago South River Care Group vision, which is to engage our community to protect and enhance water quality now and for future generations. And for me, this all comes through on this slide as well. So this slide is all about our why. Why do we do it? Because at the end of the day, if you haven't got a why, we might as well not bother starting. So my why is very much number two on the right-hand side. Well, the kids swimming. At the end of the day, I grew up swimming in the river, and I think it's our right to have kids, my grandchildren, want to learn and swim in the river like we had. The bottom corner one is my whānau, and we're at the river having a picnic, a barbecue, and people have seen my presentation before. You know, I always have that one there, because this is really the whole gut of what the whole thing's all about. It's about us being able to do what our ancestors did. Top right, something that I've learned since I've been involved in water catchment, water care groups. I didn't know what a galaxid was. But now I do. So it's about biodiversity, and we learned a lot about biodiversity. And I can tell you, when we started our journey in 2014, not one farmer knew about galaxies. They're just gubbies. Okay, and that's like a real education thing. But in the end, the big picture, one of my favourite pictures, this is the local kindergarten kids, because I do it for the local kindergarten kids and their kids. And this is the local kindergarten kids leaving my place, where I'll talk about later, where we have a planting project, going way back to school, having done a day, playing in the water and planting a few plants, and just basically having a good time. Because that, to me, this is what it's all about. And this is why we're doing it. Then we got the vision. So I'm just going to break it into two parts. What can catchment groups offer? What can catchment groups offer? And then we'll go, you know, what the regional council can offer you. So what we can offer, first of all, connections. So it's all about, life is about establishing connections and engagement. So it's about connecting the farmer. It's about connecting the regional council staff to the farmer. It's about connecting the councillors with the farms and what's happening on farms. It's about the stakeholders all being on farm and talking together. It's about the landowners, and it's about the community as a whole. So we've got to get all these people all connecting together to get to the common goal so that my kindergarten kids can enjoy, their kids can enjoy the river as we have, and they can go fishing and collect mahinga kai and do all those sorts of things. It's about ownership. As soon as you give ownership to something, the problem's solved. So by giving the catchment groups or the community's ownership of the issue, when they're, all of a sudden we start working to their visions and to their values. And if you're working to their, you can't, it's very hard to achieve somebody else's vision. You've got to achieve your own vision. So you've got to go back to, you're going to achieve the visions and the goals of the individual catchment area or individual community area. And once you get those, once you're dealing to your own visions and goals, then all of a sudden you become innovative to work out ways how to achieve where you want to get to because it's your goals. So you become very innovative. Then the innovators then become the leaders. Okay, so the people that are leaders then become the educators. So it's the cycle of things going around. So it's the ownership. At the end of the day, the ownership creates innovation, leaders, and then the educators coming through. And then it comes through to the results. At the end of the day, I believe you get greater results because of that ownership and the connections that you can get with everybody working together. So you get results. And the results come in awareness, they come in engagement, they come in change, and then you do get improvements. And over the page, I've got one of a graph here. But just before I do that, I just want to run through two or three quick things from the Pomahaka. So in the Pomahaka, we did a paper for NPI that was for basically that they could use to talk to Minister Parker about. And it's about how can you show me that catchment groups work? So we did a few numbers, and it's all about how we do things work. So it's about engagement. So we got over half the farmers in our area are members. We have 20 or 30. We have 20 meetings a year. We have stakeholders meetings. We get awareness. We go had over 500 good management practices posters go out to farmers. We have newsletters. We go to the show. We got videos that get 20, 30, 50,000 views. We're doing videos all the time. We have monthly articles in the newspaper. We have good management practices coming through all the time. We're getting exposure. We're starting to move to the next level type stuff where we've developed our own best management response team. So we're becoming our own compliance people, you could say. Not quite, but nearly. We're involving schools. We've had over 500 school children coming through our program. We've got every school in our area has got a piece of waterway that is their piece of waterway. We're there planting some plants and they're taking water measurements. We've got our riparian planting program, which has had over 20,000 plants go out of it so far. There's another 10,000 orders that are in process. That's a community job. There's $40,000 been given to the local community for their swimming pool. And now the community that we're supporting now is the local Redwood Restone. So for them to do their units. So that's a community project. They get $2 a plant. And everybody knows about it. Everybody knows about it. We've got our mitigation trials. We've got wetland stuff going. And now we're starting into a major wetland project, a new biodiversity. So as things are evolving, it's into biodiversity and new thinking is coming through. This graph, the numbers you got up on the wall, this is the Pomahaka, this is the lava, land air water, like 5-year medium trends of all the ORC testing sites on the Pomahaka. The ones that have got green beside them, they're all improving. Okay? I'm not saying you're meeting the level, but they're all improving. The ones with yellow are much the same, the ones with red means they've gotten worse over the 5 years. You'll notice the top one is an E. coli one at 92, which is pretty good E. coli reading in anyone's standings. The bottom line, the Wairuna, that's the one area where our group has had trouble getting significant farmer engagement. And so, and that rib also has some issues with being a mud bottom, etc. But it works, and I think we've got details there that show that it works. OIC support for catchment groups. So what can you guys do for catchment groups? That goes really fast, eh? Basically, we need you to be able to enable. First one's enable. Okay? We need to have a can-do attitude. We want that. We need to have a council that's positive about the environment and making an environmental difference. We want one that can get positive outcomes. We want a proactive management approach. We want to do things before they become a disaster. We want to be having river management plans rather than river clean up the rubbish plans. We want to have clear processes. We want to have processes that are open and clear and transparent so everybody knows what to go. We need to have engagement. We need to have more people on the land. We've got to have people out there to get profile. We need to have liaison staff out there on the land. We need to have our relationship to be a positive relationship, which is one of trust between farmers and the council. We need to have independent coordinator. So we need to provide a link that can go across all catchment groups that can link with the council and people within the council. We need to educate the educators. So we need people in the top three. We need educated as well, right? It's not just the farmers. We need educated to do what we do. So we need to educate the educators. We need to have empowered staff. We need to have staff that know the rules, that can stand beside an issue and say, yes, you can do that. No, you can't do that. That's what we need. That's how you educate on the ground. You can't educate any other way. We need to work with schools, which we're doing. We need the science team to step up and actually be out there and doing things. We need to be able to have access to water quality stuff easily. We need to have access to maps easily. We need to actually get together and work together. We need to have clear and enforceable rules. Right now we've got rules. Are they clear? Are they enforceable? We don't know. They're certainly not clear. So we need to, if you're going to have a rule, make sure it's a rule that you can actually put a red line beside. Funding. So the last thing is funding. At the end of the day, we need funding. Well, we need startup funding for facilitation, advertising, venue, that sort of stuff. Because when you get started, it's really a burden on the starting. So the keen guys are already doing it. We need to have specific contestable funding for the sort of stuff that we do, as opposed to being in amongst all the other all the other funding stuff. And we need to provide funding for specific testing of specific projects. So we need to have funding that's all ready. So that's pretty much for me. In summary, I think for all of us, we've got a strong template. We've actually got water care groups that work. We've got water care groups that are recognised around the country. We know that they work, so we've got a strong template. So we need to promote and enhance that model and move it throughout our own areas as well. So we need to just keep replicating it. No two groups are the same. So you can't have a template that this is a water care group or not. Or this is a community group. Everyone has their different issues. So everyone has to have their own individuality within their groups. All catchment groups evolve, and we're finding as the catchment groups evolve, we're evolving from the initial one, which is water, through to biodiversity, through to carbon credits, through to whatever's next down the line. And like biodiversity is becoming very much the very big thing because it links in so well together. And we need to have a whole of community involvement. So we need to have a whole of community involvement. We've got an awesome opportunity that if we can build a strong community-based catchment groups and our fresh management water units establishment, that's going to just make things so much easier, and actually we'll get results that are worthwhile. We're very much in favour of your option two. At the end of the day, we believe that it would be an awesome investment for you guys, and we'd just like to encourage you to work with us to get to the end goal. Ka taia tātou te mahi. Together we can achieve more. Ko te tātou wai, ko te tātou haranga. Our water, our future. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Can I just go along the line? You know, you read our paper, option one or option two. Can you tell me what you'd like?
Oh, option two.
It's been rehearsed.
It's five
now at this stage. Uh-huh.
My question was, and maybe that's made simpler by the fact that two seems to be the overwhelming support here.
if I gave each of your groups, if you were us and you had, say, $100,000 to support groups in Otago, what would be your top things that you would do with it?
I mean, probably from a Wanaka or a Upper Clutha perspective, I think for us, we're a reasonably well-functioning group representing 14 farmers out of 200, from Cromwell up, so the Upper Clutha. Yeah. So in our area, I think the money probably needs to go to supporting other groups to start up
cover
a greater geographical area.
If you had that money, you would be focusing probably on start-up groups that haven't yet got going.
Yes, in our area there are gaps that need to be filled, and money and resources are required to help support people to fill in those gaps. Other groups will be.
So from Muslims' point of view, our status quo is actually pretty grim and good in terms of the funding. So we've got the paid coordinator. That means we've got information going. And in 3-year chunks, the good plan. That's all stop start because we're out.
If it had 100,000, would you say we'll keep what we've got, and what would you do with the other 20,000?
We run leaner than that.
You know what I mean.
But I know what you mean. We would do some special projects probably. Lyndon might have some other ideas as well. But
to me, the real benefits and the real gains are made with the paid coordinator, and that doesn't take a lot. 20 hours a week is giving us huge gains, and we're getting $15,000 a year from OIC, and we complement that with irrigation money. That money is achieving us huge gains because we don't taper off in the spring or the summer.
That's
a good point.
It's absolutely vital.
I've got Kana wanting to. Oh, sorry.
I'd very much be the first thing I'd do. We're strongly supported by the OIC now on both my projects. But the first thing I'd do is strengthen my own. Advise you guys, I'll be strengthening my own education team, farmer liaison team. I'll be getting people on the ground that are in a non-confrontational educational role that can actually travel the mission, because the plan's all about education. And so that's the first thing I'd do, because you've got to build you can't do anything until you've got trust. So you've got to get trust going between everybody. And then after that, it would be like answer the question, we got seed funding for the Clutha group, which Clutha groups would never start without it. That's if I got money, I'd do that in Otago wide. I'll be doing that in other areas to start the groups up, and then once they get the projects, they can go.
Yeah,
and
can I add a little bit? The important thing is to have that funding for that administration role, which simple structure. We believe we've got a reasonably well, and I know we said that's what's wrong. So don't want to bog ourselves down with writing big huge reports and wasting a whole lot of money. We want to put it up the farm gate.
Firstly, I'd expect you to ask me that question before you gave me the money, but if I was faced with an unlikely situation, it would be conjecture on my part, because it would be a decision of the group, obviously, but the most urgent thing that I see is in addressing the freshwater management plans that are coming down, and I would be looking at that whole of community environment plan.
Carmen, followed by Brian, followed by Gary. Okay.
Thank you. We're going to go into this paper and debate it, but I just want to ask you a question, Noslem. You talked about sharing a platform and having a portal. Is that something you would like to see in all the catchment groups?
Yeah, I see that there's efficiencies there in scale, and, yeah. a really well-designed GIS could be used across all catchment groups from the ones that are just starting up all the way through to the ones that have been going for 10 or 15 years. So a well-designed one could be scalable across the whole region. And it would just make setting up those catchment groups so much easier if all of that legwork was done. Contact databases and maps of land use types and all of that sort of stuff will just flow through
and,
so nicely.
And this is a bit of a funny question, but there is merit to it. If you say you decided to sell where you lived and you went Randall and you went from Mount Aspiring and you went to West Otago, could that portal help you, though, if, you know, patiently see where you're going to go to in a different country and see what's going to be there? I mean,
I think well designed in the right way, reasonably sort of intuitive and interactive, there's no reason why it shouldn't have a lot of the information you probably do by gut when you go and look around on your phone.
Yes.
These days.
Thank you.
And it would probably encourage a farmer to get involved in the catchment.
Well, that's what I was thinking too.
Yes.
I've lost what I was looking at on the. But basically, I think what option two is basically saying is that we establish that the catchment groups have some time to establish a plan, that the ORC continues its funding of the Pombic, Haka and Noslam in the order of 30 grand. We do our in-kind support, and then potentially another 200 grand a year, potentially for another 3 years in terms of commitment. Sarah, yeah?
It's just proposed for the annual plan at this stage, but there's no reason why we couldn't carry it through.
And so my question is, you know, we're going to be debating this, and isn't it actually enough? There's a lot of catchment groups, there's some big challenges out there. I haven't actually sat down and tried to divide that cake, because there would need to be quite a lot of seed funding. There needs to be a lot of work in relation to Jeff saying, you know, community catchment group, environmental plans, like this.
There's a lot of contestable funds out there for specific projects. So
yeah.
if you take specific projects and you push them off to one side,
yeah.
What we're talking about here is actually the keeping the nuts and bolts going,
yeah.
and getting funding to apply for those things and to have the time and the expertise to be able to find that money and bring it in for that specific project. So I think for $200,000 you could just spread that across the catchment groups of Otago and really get some pretty good results.
Okay, well that's great. And you know, the key thing I want to say is thank you, guys. You know, when 6A was put together, you know, with the community, we thought to a certain degree, you know, we're being innovative, we're leading, and then the ORC has slipped behind. And it's actually you guys that have been leading, and I acknowledge that, and I thank you for it. And ideally, we can work together. We've got a new water plan coming up, but on the ground, we need to be doing this stuff, because that's what's going to be sustainable for the future, and each one of you is a leader, and I just say thank you. It's just amazing, and we haven't appreciated that as a council. I think in reality, if you push aside our words, the reality is we haven't worked as well as we could have. So hopefully, onwards and upwards.
I think, Brian, it's important that when you're doing it, that you involve catchment groups in your discussion around how you work with your money, but I'm sure you'll get a multiplier effect out of it as we get other groups all coming in on the same vision, because it's going to happen one way or other.
Far more important than money, can I say, is that you develop policy which incentivises community ownership.
Yeah. It's Gary, just before Gary Gretchen and then Michael. Can I just say, I couldn't agree more about the fact that it's very hard to raise money for administration. I found that in other NGOs, not ones to do with social, you know, mental health issues and stuff like that. It's really hard. They'll do it for the big project, they won't do it for the grunt stuff. Gary.
Yeah, well done, guys. Great stuff. I think it's what I'm aware of in the Upper Clutha one, and talking to Chris Arbuckle, there's some really, really good stuff going on there and in the other groups. One question just around legal entities and structures. Have you legal entities or formal structures established collectively and separately?
We're an incorporated society.
Right.
We all have separate legal entities at this stage.
something we need to work around.
So if an overall volume of money, say whether it's 200k or whatever, was made available, you can then distribute where the need is, where you're saying, Randall, you're saying you're already established and then others need more.
I'm pretty sure we all work together, we'd be able to create structures that are required to be able to get the best value for your investment and the best value for other people's investments. But because that's something that's, you know, that we can work on together, because we're not, you can't, like, the 10 people on one street can't have a legal entity, so they'll work out other ways around it, which we're in the process of.
So we have no legal entity at this stage in our group.
Combinedly.
Self-funded, the money actually just goes through Chris Harbuckle's account, on good faith, I suppose.
Yeah.
And we know where he lives. Yeah, so I mean, it's different strokes for different groups, but certainly if we ramp up, that's what we'd have to look at.
If you think about that, what we're trying to do is to grease the wheel to get other groups or other areas to start up a catchment group. And one of the big sort of constraints is to say, well, I don't even know how to set up an incorporated society. And, you know, I want to plant some plants and clean up the waterway, but I don't really know anything about this. So if ORC can come in that initial seed and in kind and help with that establishment, that's actually gold, because it takes the problem away for 6 or 12 months to get the momentum going.
That we had in kind help. Lawyers and accountants helped us to set up.
Yeah.
We have no legal entity. If we needed one for a special project, then we would set it up to one side as a standalone enterprise rather than complicate matters. It's much harder to pull together a diverse group of people from a community and to keep them engaged than it is to create a legal entity.
Incredibly aware of that. Yep, thank you.
Gretchen, followed by Michael.
Just thinking about the potential that you've raised there, particularly, Jeff, when you talked about whole of catchment environmental plans and just the power of catchment groups as we go forward and try to create a new land and water plan. Basically, the MPS is promoting freshwater management units and looking at land and water and the interface. And it's really going to be up to communities to set the standards and the rules and the way they want to go about it in each catchment. Is there real potential for working with the council and a catchment group, and could it be a really valuable tool for the council to have these set up? And another thing to consider with that is, when it does get political and you've got a wide grouping and they're having to go through this process, what does that do for your group too? Is it positive? Is it negative? How do you stay together? Something to consider. That's a real life thing that's going to happen.
I think it's positive because the group has no statutory authority, obviously. When you're talking about land use, the effect that we can have on that is indirect, but it's stronger than you think. Because the opinion of a diverse group like that, even in the existing consent process, is strong enough to steer the direction of water allocation. Any movement in water allocation at the moment, while it is not legally subject to the approval of the catchment group, is nevertheless highly subject to it, because in the review process, a group like that carries a huge clout. So we do affect land use. I don't see it as in any way divisive at all, because it reflects the attitude of the community. If your opinion is different from ours as a community, then there's something wrong, and it's probably with you.
I just like to counter that, so as to say that, you know, that we, if we stopped doing stuff in our catchment group every time there was a policy or plan change at council, we wouldn't have done anything. So we're kind of the steady force. We're the doing. So we're always doing, and we'll be always doing no matter what happens in the FMU process. And I think that's what we've got to keep in mind as well.
And that's why we set up our being non-political, because we didn't want to end up in that trap.
Right.
Farmers have got their groups. The environmentalists have got their groups. The residents have got their groups. They will all do what they do, as long as we keep on doing positive stuff for the catchment.
So we actually do looked at many, many different groups in society. I came out of education. They keep on changing things up there. We kept on teaching in the classroom.
Yes. These catchment groups are not farmer groups.
No.
No.
Yeah. Understand that. Michael?
I'm interested in two of your comments because they are pertinent to a discussion we had earlier this morning. The one is you're opposed to the concept of one size fits all, as I understand it. I think you were making that point, Randall. You were saying that your catchments are different and they've got to be treated differently in terms of policy and approach by the ORC. Is that correct? Have I got that right?
Yeah, I think the catchments are different and the people within the catchments are different, so they have different challenges and there's different levers or motivations within those catchments to produce action. I'm aware that policy is difficult to tailor down too much, but I guess where we can through the FMU process, and I guess having that flexibility and maturity within the policy that allows individual areas to get in and do what they want to do rather than being held back by something that's too inflexible.
I think within the FMU, if you look at the North Otago FMU, we're currently discussing whether we increase our boundaries down to the Nosland, down to the Shag and up to the Lower Waitaki, so we mirror the FMU. You can still have similar values set across that FMU, but you can have unique water quality measures for each of our unique rivers.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely, because they can be so different.
Yep. Still one set of values, but yeah. Individual tables.
The second question I've got is that, I think it was you again, Randall, that said we need the farm liaison team, I assume from the ORC, unleashed. What did you mean? Oh, was it Lloyd?
Yeah, no, I was very much in favour we need to have a... I don't know if I said unleashed, but
strength.
I'm
yeah, that was the word.
No, the word was unleashed.
The word was
strength. And they've been held back for many years.
By what?
By lack of certainty. They couldn't give advice. They were told not to give advice to farmers because they might put themselves in a legally compromising position. So they weren't allowed to go out and say, that's wrong, do this. Whereas farmers have been saying, what do I need to do, especially with all of the uncertainty around water plans. So we were asking for advice and not getting it.
Mm. Are you still getting? Are you not getting?
No,
it
it's much better.
At this stage, we got a very, you got a very, very good rural liaison team. They're very good. The trouble is, there's not enough of them. They get burnt out. They can't. We need people. We need to follow up visits up farmers' drives so they can get to the meetings. That's good. But we need to take it to the next level because that's building trust. Because you've got to be not just a face in a meeting room. You've got to be a face in a kitchen because that's how you build your trust. And you've got to be trusted, be welcomed into the kitchen. And once you can do that, we can all work together and get and achieve more goals.
So when I come down this end, the rural liaison team is really good. We don't really see them in Wanaka. Mm. Bruce tries, but Bruce is going from
everywhere,
Gilmart to Queenstown to Wanaka, so he physically just doesn't have the time to spend time with us.
It's the same down here where you'll see three, you know, the farmers know all about the compliance people. They're up there, they're always there, they know about them, but they don't. They know there's a liaison team, but they never see them unless they're at a meeting, basically.
I look at the numbers ago, since 2014 and 6A, if you'd had a rural liaison person visiting one farm a week since 2014 and just having a chat, they'll be on their revisits of all the farms in Otago by now. Build that relationship up. Having a walk around the farm, looking at the real clangers, if we'd started early, that resource would have been actually, we would be so much further down the road by now.
I want to go to Kate, and I just want to say to councillors, the time is 3:00. I want to get the people who've written the paper up in front of us, and then I'll have a conversation about how much time we've got to do at least 8 major papers today.
Don't worry.
Okay, Kate. Kevin?
One of the words that came out was individuality, and that's around catchments, but if we look at it at the farmer base, or not necessarily a farmer, an industry base, what could ORC do best to assist you to bring on board the fellas that aren't quite got the enthusiasm as your Noslams, as your Wanakas, as your Upatoris. So what could we best do legally?
So you can incentivise it through your inspections, and you've got rural environmental rates. There's all sorts of things you could do, or user pays systems. There's all sorts of things. But the main thing is to have like clear and precise rules, so the ones that drag the whole team down, it's made really clear that that's not where it's at. But it has to be clear and concise rules.
If an example was made of something gone wrong, then that can be a real motivation tool. So it's really important to have enforceable bottom lines.
And just being aware of that, sorry, that just because you've got 50% membership and 50% non-membership, if that 50% is lifting, the other 50% will be lifting.
Correct. Yeah,
just naturally through looking over the fence, talking to their neighbours.
Yep.
So it's not about getting 100% membership in the room. It's about lifting, and then everyone will follow, and then there may be a few.
Sound policy can make or break us. If you develop policy which creates an issue for people, and that issue can be resolved at community level, then you've done your job. As it, with the rabbit thing, where everybody was subject to scale, well, three now, it used to be four, they had a choice of either becoming part of the company and having all of that taken off their plate, or a visit from the compliance officer to make and asking them to embark on an expensive rabbit control program all off their own back. So that's good policy.
Thank you.
I wonder, can you people just stay there? Who's going to come to the desk? Can you people tuck on the end? Thank you. Can you just squidgel up? Bring your seat with you.
There's two chairs here.
Squidgel up.
Thank you, dear. Thanks, Alexa.
Now,
this is Gavin and
Andrea.
Right, I should have had a look. Can I suggest this and just see if the council agrees? You've all read the papers.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a really good explanation here.
Mm-hmm.
Are there things that you think that we ought to say, or can we ask questions of you straight away? Would you like us to ask questions of you straight away?
Take it as read.
Yes.
Okay, look. Then the first one I want to ask you is, how long would option two take? Because when I read it, it said, the option would allow consideration of support options. Small working group could undertake the following activities to inform a budget and implementation plan in time for the long-term plan thimijig. And agreed criteria for classifying a catchment group. And I said to myself, how long would that take? Because I want this up and going.
Set and are focused, we could probably do that within about 3 months. So it's just that balance of doing the groundwork before coming up with the answers, and that's really important work that needs to be done. But obviously the boundaries around what could be done are quite enormous, so we have to make sure that we're focused and have strategic input at this front.
I can also add.
I would like to move option two, Madam Chair.
Just hang on.
Why is that?
Well, I was just going to add a little bit more.
Discussion going. We're going to be doing that, Brian.
If I just add a little bit more. So we have been a bit deliberate in what we've said around option two, which we link that to the LTP, and that's really important. We link it to the LTP rather than to the annual plan. So the annual plan provision that we've made for the next financial year is the 200k that we've put aside and provides for that work to be done. So that as we come to LTP planning, we're in a position where we know what the forward program looks like, and then we can fund it accordingly. So we're not locked in before we get to LTP stage. So it's a kind of two stages.
Hilary.
Small working group would include?
So we thought the working group might include councillors from the portfolios that are relevant, so maybe biodiversity, water, for example. Also that we could call for an expression of interest for people to be on the working group. And obviously I think it would be fortuitous to have some of the members here, if not all of the members here, but I think in terms of, if you like, providing an opportunity for others who maybe are at an earlier time in their journey to also be involved would be useful. So an expression of interest was the sort of the idea we had, and obviously there'd be support from staff. So Andrea in her good water role, also staff from rural liaison and possibly from the strategy team within council as well, to assist with building that initial plan and strategy around how we set everything up effectively.
Andrea, you wouldn't see every catchment group being the same as each other, would you? When you're thinking about doing this model, you're not thinking that they're all identical.
Through the chair, no, that's correct. I think the model really is just around identifying what it is that we want to achieve and how best to achieve that. So there are, my reasonably limited understanding, but there are a number of organisations who provide support. So it would be fortuitous for us to look at what the gaps were as well as the feedback that we've got, so that we're, I guess, maximising the return on the public investment that we might be putting in place.
Sorry, this is still part of the same question. If we had the FMU councillors, then maybe they could nut out between them, which would be either the catchments that are particularly needed to be representatives with the liaison with the ones that are here, and the catchments that groups that haven't yet been formed but which next need to be formed or something. So those FMU people could help decide who would be involved with that group, I'd have thought.
One of the things that I asked Sarah about was kind of like a map. There are the FMUs and the Rohe, and some of the FMUs have Rohe in them. And then inside that, there are catchment groups, and we'd be able to see where there were some gaps, presumably, Steve.
Yeah, just following on, like, it seems to me, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about councillors. It seems to me that, you know, the five gentlemen here, for example, the experience and wisdom that they've gained over the time, that I would actually like to think that the council spend most of their time listening as opposed to diving into a corner and coming up with their own mad scheme.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about seed funding. Jeff's talked about community environmental plan. There's a lot of wisdom there to put something together, and it's going to be really exciting if we use these more than this. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that as well. It'd be fantastic to have the input of these guys and perhaps some others as well, and bring in some other diversity, maybe a university or other, you know, more diverse thinking as well. But yeah, just again, this is certainly the way to go, and local government is about local people, and if we can't trust our local communities to make decisions for themselves, who can we trust? So yeah, really important, and I think even in the paper, reflecting that more is important. We had, I think it was four key themes that came from probably these guys, and what they saw was important, and they worked out to be that each catchment's different, local knowledge is really important, local ownership of issues is really crucial, and true change takes time. Great, those are fantastic. And in our paper we then say, in addition to that, we should make sure that the council is achieving its own objectives. That's kind of flying in the face of the whole point of catchment groups, is that actually the community is the council, and we, especially through the FMU process, communities are going to set what their direction is, and that actually we're the same thing. So with that in mind, surely we can trust that community catchment groups are about achieving council's objectives. And once we set criteria for what makes a catchment group, I would imagine they're not going to be an interest group, say, that perhaps wants to, let's say they're wanting to build a dam and they're only interested in economic outcomes. That's not a catchment group. They are diverse interests to make a catchment group, so then we would be trusting that community that they are going to be implementing council's objectives, because it's the same thing. Really keen to see this go ahead, really keen for us not to take over the ownership though of this by, say, funding it and then grabbing it and it becomes a council thing. needs to be. So, yeah, it does say that really strongly, and I think by having community involved, setting what the criteria will be and ongoing monitoring of it and the cohesion, which we heard about someone, I think it was Lloyd, talked about a model of an overarching person, say, or grouping that's like catchment groups, Otago or something, so that there's a more of a coordinated approach to bringing people together. That might be really helpful too, but hey, it'll come out of all of our thinking, what's the best approach. But yeah, thanks heaps, and yeah, just want to make that point. We're all here together.
It's Michael D, it's Kevin, it's Alexa, and then I'm going to ask that young man to move his motion.
Very good, thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Pardon me. I'm trying to visualise this small working group, and I'm defining small as six. Mm-hmm. Andrea, is that roughly what you were thinking about?
Through the chair, yes, that sounds like a reasonable amount.
Any more than that, you're going to have a committee, and we know where they go. If it was six, I'd like to see it made up of two of these blokes or their nominees, two of our rural liaison team, because they really know what they're about, and they understand the eco fund system as well, and it's important to keep that in mind when we're developing this. So there's four, maybe one councillor, and one staff manager. That's how I'd see it happen. But to put more than one councillor on is, I think, a waste of space.
Kevin, thank you. Kevin.
I was just about to waste a lot of space because I was going to put more than one councillor on, but I'm probably pretty happy with your sentiments. If Councillor Scott would like to move his motion, I would like to just ensure that he adds a description of that working group, and that would be around ensuring that we do have a fair chunk of the five gentlemen at the head of the table. That does include you, Gavin, but if you don't want to be on, well, I'm just saying this all. I think we need to start aligning our FMUs and the councillors assigned to those FMUs. So I know I don't want to get into a great big committee structure, as you're saying, Councillor Deeker, but I think this is a very good time for us to, and we may shrink it quite quickly, but it'll be very good for the FMU heads as councillors to be involved with that group initially, just to start nutting things out, and we may shrink it from there. So agreed size is important, but I think this is a very good time for us to start with our FMU councillors working with the representatives from the catchment groups.
Okay, I've just heard that, and I am going to put... First motion is that we receive the report. The second motion is that we agree to support, and we'll, from just picking up around the table, option two. If you want to add that bit that you've just talked about there, I'd like that to almost go up as a, what do we call it, an amendment, because I think there might be some division about at this table right now, naming people. I feel nervous about doing that.
I think that's the next step, Madam Chair.
Okay, do you want to move?
Yeah, I'll put that motion.
The first part, I can see you, Michael.
Yep.
Which is that you received the report?
Certainly.
Is there a seconder for that, please?
Yep.
Michael D. All those in favour? Any discussion first up? No discussion? All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And against? Carried. The second one is that we support option two. Are you moving that?
Correct.
And have I got a seconder?
Yep.
Alexa, I'll choose. Right. Any discussions or questions? Alexa?
I've just got a couple of points around here. I think I love the work and the progress that's been made here. One little concern I've got, as I read through the paper and what's been going on and seeing your numbers, it's important to ensure that our aspiration and our goals are for regeneration, not just the slowing of degeneration. That's something that really concerns me. I really want to see aspire to regeneration. When we go through the stakeholders and thinking about working groups, I think we also need to think about the stakeholders in point 33 in our papers, page 7. And there's a bunch of people there listed in there. And the catchment groups need to be able to leverage the support of those national stakeholders. So there needs to be some expertise there to leverage funding and leverage support throughout through, you know, MPI, Dairy NZ, etc. I also think that the FMU, that councillors from the FMU should at least be present, if not part of the working party as much, but should be able to be there and attend and to learn. And I don't think we should lock in at this point who's on the working groups in a motion. It's, to me, it's policy on the fly, and we'll work that out. We already know that we want the experience in this room as part of that, and we want the FMU councillors to learn from that as well. And in my mind, we also want to leverage the national stakeholders, and we want to lift our game in terms of regeneration.
Thank you, Alexa. Michael?
I'm not going to vote for the motion at the moment because the motion is that we are going to develop a series of increased support options for consideration during the long-term plan process. It's just not good enough. The long-term plan will take part on the 1st of July 2021. Today is January 2020. Are you really going to take 18 months to develop a series of increased support options? That's pathetic. If we're serious about this, why aren't we putting it into our draft annual plan for this year? Why are we waiting 18 months?
Can I ask the CE to answer?
Okay, so number one, we're not waiting 18 months because there is a provision in the proposed annual plan funding for next year of $200,000. That's already been made. You haven't agreed to it yet, so you need to agree to it, but we have made the provision in the proposed budget.
Page 23.
That $200,000 will allow us to do the piece of work we're talking about and to start. From there, our LTP discussions are not too far away. Yes, the LTP is, it doesn't kick off for the next financial year, it's the one after, but actually the discussions are not too far away. So we need to be informed by the initial piece of work to know what the overall budgeting and provision needs to be moving forward for the 10 years of the LTP. So what I'm saying is, we're not going to not do anything because we're going to have the 200k if you agree to it in the annual plan for next year, and then we can take the work that we'll do as a part of that and inform further the LTP discussions, and if more money is required or a different way of cutting the cake, then that's available to us for the following year.
Okay, thank you.
That's why it's just not quick enough.
Do you want more money?
Well, the issue is we could do something now. I mean, that process says we've got our $200,000 options. We've got our options coming up. Why would we again wait till the 1st of July 2021 before we do anything?
No, 2020.
Yes, I would.
It's 2020.
No, it's 2021.
Just hang on, Lord. He's going to move an amendment, and that tidies it up.
That we develop a series of important support options for consideration during this annual plan process.
Okay.
And first of all, can I have a seconder? Hillary?
Can I just ask?
Yep.
We're having an annual plan workshop tomorrow,
yeah.
Which you will have the first opportunity to see numbers. The difficulty I have in offering anything up further is that it's on the fly. So, I could say 500,000 or I could say more than that, but I can't point you to what we'll deliver for that because we haven't done the work. So that's my issue. I thought 200,000 was probably a reasonable amount to get us through the work that we need to do in order to have the plan and everything set up, and also to do, if there's opportunities, to do some initial seed funding or whatever the case may be, if those opportunities come up in the 12 months of next financial year before we end up in the financial year after that.
Rather than go into a long, long debate, can I actually put that amendment to the group now? All those in favour of Michael's amendment, please say aye.
Can you reread the amendment? And can I speak to that amendment? You may be sighing, but it would be good to understand it. Right. My understanding is that there's a process for in the order of 3 months to put together a plan, but the expectation is that on 1st of July this year, 2020, there's in the order of 200 grand for that next year can be part of that implementation plan, yeah? Is that correct?
Yes.
That's correct. So that's the situation. And, Michael, you've moved an amendment just to make sure that that happens.
Correct.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough.
Would you read your amendment again?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Brian. It develop a series of increased support options for consideration during the annual plan process, this coming annual plan process. Currently it reads, no, Michael Deaker, it reads long-term process. Mm. I want it considered this annual plan, and if that also allows, if we put it in our annual plan, these catchment guys to come in front of us in any other catchment or a nascent catchment and make a contribution to our annual plan saying, listen, we've got $50,000 project that we'd like to do. We've got that education process. We've got that administrator ready to go. We need some funding for this, and then come to us with specific projects for this financial year.
Yeah. So my understanding is, Councillor Laws, that you're simply just formalising what's...
No, it's got a long-term plan.
Long-term plan.
Because this is the first tranche of it, and then we actually making sure that it's totally workable. Because it's 3 months to get up something that you want to put in forever in there.
We've got to notify the annual plan.
Just really quickly, I support the original, not the amended. Just think that there is an opportunity. If anyone had a project that was really useful, they could come to the annual plan and make a submission and put a good case forward if they've got a specific one. Otherwise, we need a bit of time to think strategically about how we invest in 1 year, 200,000, developing overall coordination. There's a lot we can be doing.
Hilary, you had the seconder.
Yes, I had two questions. One of them was, and I'm not meaning for a moment to be rude, I just don't know the answer to this. How was it that you particular gentleman turned up here today? I mean, rather than anybody else, or was everybody invited and you guys came?
I think we were just the first cabs off the rank.
So, we've had a number of contact points. So there are, for example, I've met with these gentlemen or the representatives of these groups on a couple of occasions to try and understand better about how we might work together and how also what we do impacts catchment groups and the like. So I did that. Our executive team then went on a roadshow and spoke to catchment groups as per invitation. So we worked on that process. There's also been the workshop with catchment groups that Lloyd referenced, which was direct questions from ORC, so from me, effectively saying, okay, well, I need to get a mandate from council to work with you. I know that it's been expressed around the council table that that's a desire of council, that we do that. What is the thing that will help the most? Because rather than me saying, hey, council, I think we should do this, I felt it was much more valuable to have the input from the catchment groups themselves, who are the ones who know better than anyone what the best solutions are and the best ways that we can work together. So, if you like, I started it off and various staff have been involved in the conversations.
The reason for that question is that I'd be a wee bit concerned to form a small group based on this group for no other reason than that our chief executives happens to have been working with this group rather than, for instance, somebody who's about to start a group or wants to do something, or a different group who just our chief executive didn't happen to have. I mean, so if it's just a question of how you get the representatives that come from the...
Landcare Research has been holding 3 catchment group workshops now with catchment groups from around Otago. So I guess, like, we fully understand your concerns there. So we'd be happy for you to go through Craig Simpson, sitting over there, at Landcare Research to get some kind of nominations or feedback or suggestions or applications. Yeah.
It isn't a concern looking at you, it's just a
especially if
somebody new who hasn't yet formed a group is not one of you guys, but we would want their input probably. So the second question I've got is what it sounds to me, and I could be wrong here, is that the difference between these two, the amendment and the initial one, could be $200,000 that our staff spend looking into it for the next year, or that our staff decide to provide part of that $200,000 to a group that we haven't, I don't get where, if we agree to this, which is a looking into thing for the annual plan, which means that it's the next 15 months, that money could go just into administration of where we get to the beginning of the thing that Michael wants to get to straight away.
Can I ask a question of the CE? Is this $200,000 that's been mentioned, is this for research by this group down there, or is it also actually supporting some of the groups, some of the catchment groups?
No, so we've talked about a three-month time frame, so we should hopefully have some idea at about the same time as we're going into the new financial year of what the outcomes are of the initial working group. The $200,000 would then support initiatives that come off that process. And certainly, I can assure you, the $200,000 is for catchment groups. It's not for funding internal staff research or processes.
So that $200,000 would come back to us. It would come back to us to hear the working group spent 3 months looking into it and things. And during the next year, this 2021 year, something will come back to us saying, here's a bit of a proposal now as to where we spend that $200,000 before it just disappears off, or does the working group decide it, or
so
does it come back to
there's
us?
There's some options, and I think they'll be worked out through the working group. But first of all, one option is that the working group works out funding strategy and how things are going to be sorted. That's a process that you approve, but you don't necessarily approve the apportioning of money to each individual thing if you've got a process, because that can be done under financial delegation inside of the organisation. If you decide that you want a process that's maybe similar to the EcoFund process, then there's some decision-making to be done by council.
During the annual plan?
No, for the $200,000.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, not during the annual plan, because we won't have... If it's going to take us 3 months to sit down and work all this through, you're not going to have anything, any plans to apportion the money inside of the annual plan process.
No, you're not.
Which is why we've said LTP, which is, well, the holding position is 200 grand for next year. That's what's proposed. You can choose to do something different. And then we'll have all the ducks in a row and we'll know whether it's 200 for the following years or whether it's 300 or whether it's something else.
So when
that's the plan.
When we discuss the annual plan that has the $200,000
in it, yes,
we can say we are putting out to consultation this $200,000 in here, and it would come back to us about where it goes and what's happening with it for the next year.
Actually, I'm having a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
I ask
so
that the motion be put.
Hang on for that.
Why can't I ask that?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, so I ask that the motion be put.
Have you got a seconder?
Option two. Seconder? Yes, I have got a seconder.
Okay.
Do the amendment first.
Is your
seconder
to the motion being now put? I don't know what motion we're putting. Okay.
I think it's the amendment. Alexa, I think it's the amendment.
Excuse
I think we're quite good there from me, I think.
Just hang on a minute. Can I have a little bit of control? Self-control. What I'm getting worried about is that people in this, of the councillors, are speaking far more than once. And when I look around the room, there's only a few councillors speaking. And this is beginning to worry me in terms of actually management. Kevin, I'd like this to be the last if possible, before we go back to the motion that is on the table?
I'm pretty confident we'll be. Look, on page 23, it does say that we've made provisions for the Palmer Harbour Water Care and North Australia Sustainable Land Management, and that in the 2021 annual plan, we're allocating a further $200,000. Now, that $200,000, providing we say yes to it, will ensure the way, ensure that we have a way forward and we'll be able to sort that out. And these groups, I'm sure, while they're waiting for us to make that decision and making a long-term plan decision, will actually keep going on what they're doing. Otherwise, we'll give them a bit of a tune-up, quietly. But once that working party has organised everything and we're complete with that, we'll be able to go to the long-term plan and give these groups surety of figures in a long-term plan. So I will not be voting for the amendment, but I will be voting for the original motion.
Well, okay. That's so very good.
Listen, I withdraw the amendment because I can see the view of the table and to process things quickly for you, Marion.
Thank you. Amendment withdrawn. You second to happy to withdraw that amendment?
Happy to.
Okay, so we go with the motion which was yours, which is option two.
Correct.
And it had a seconder.
Yes, it did.
Who was that seconder?
I think it was me.
Okay. Councillor Deeker, thank you. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And against?
Thank goodness.
Carried. Done at the end. I hope your bloody meetings are better than this.
It was the Eco Fund. Don't forget the Eco Fund.
Thank you very much for what you've shared with us. It has been useful for us to see a translation of a paper into reality. And that to us is, Mr. Crutchley keeps on talking about policy. For us, it is actually always a translation into stuff on the ground. And when you get going, but as it spreads and develops, and as we get to know you better and work with you in different places, and please invite us to come out to things like, send that invitation to me, I'll come and just listen, darling,
listen. Got food.
Because I want to understand what's going on. So thank you very, very much, people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you